on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of InvestTalk. It is August 19th, 2015. And thanks for being here. I appreciate it. We appreciate all our support of our from our various listeners, whether you're listening on the radio or you're listening on live at investtalk.com or maybe a podcasters. I have lots of podcasters. Really appreciate that. And you can download it from iTunes and other podcast outlets. We hope that InvestTalk will help you make better financial decisions. That's the goal, whether it's investing or the many day-to-day choices you have to make about spending and saving your money. We like to think that is a space where reason, common sense prevail. We also hope that it's a place for exchanging ideas between you and me, and so other people can listen and get some ideas themselves. When it comes to building knowledge, of course, there's our library, which is full of books. You can see it on investtalk.com. We have a recommended book list section on that's sitting there. Investtalk.com is with two T's. Among them are classics such as Beating the Street by Peter Lynch, Creative Destruction by Richard Foster. Have you ever read Creative Destruction? I read it some time ago, but it was a very interesting book. Really is. That's how our economy really works. And if you really want to get into fundamental analysis, you can always read The Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham. It's a different, more difficult book. The Warren Buffett Way by Robert Hagstrom, and Security Analysis and Business Valuation by on Wall Street by Jeffrey Hook. And there are others. I also like Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. You ever read that book? That's kind of fun. And then the technical analysis section, Technical Analysis of the Financial Markets by John Murphy and Japanese Candlestick Charting Techniques by Steve Neeson, High Probability Trading by Marco Link, and there are a bunch of other stories and books that are there. What are you interested in? Just go to that book section, investtalk.com. And let me get a plug in for my own book, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. You could say it's a no-nonsense beginner's guide to the world of buying and selling stocks. What moves stock prices? Do I need to learn economics? Can I keep it simple? These questions and others are answered in that my book. I try to, anyways. To see more about these books and more books, again, all recommended books, you can go to investtalk.com. Do you have questions about other sources of information, websites, newspapers, magazines? You can get through to me during this 1 hour at 888-99-CHART. If you'd like to get a question between times, you can call the same number. So let's take a question that came in before today's program.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Jason from Oakland. I listen on podcast. Enjoy your show. I was wondering how China pegs their currency to ours. What's the actual mechanics of them mirroring the U.S. dollar? How do they get other countries to recognize that the yuan is worth X amount of dollars? That's my question. I appreciate an answer. I'll listen to on the podcast. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. This is how they do it. They just don't print money when they need it. They need money, they're going to print it. They don't do that. What they do is they buy American dollars, and they print more money based on how much American dollars they own. I think the peg rate is 6-point-something yuans to the dollar right now, and they let it float against our dollar at a certain rate. But they back up their printing of their money with the dollar. They buy dollars. So that's how they tie it to our dollar. They say, look, we're not going to print money just when we need it or when we want to spark inflation or not, or deflation. We don't do that. We will only print money, and this is how they do it, based on their assets of American dollars tied to the dollar. They tie their currency to the dollar that way. Everybody knows it. All the traders know it. Everybody, you know, and they don't let the bank, they don't let anybody exchange more dollars than is what's pegged to it. They don't let their currency float beyond a certain range against the dollar. They physically don't let it trade at, you know, it's not a free floating currency. They don't let it trade openly on a market. They don't. They let you trade it, but only if you stay within, you have to stay within the peg. You can't buy or sell it outside those peg limits. That's how they do it. I hope that's clear. Good question, though. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Love to talk to you. We're going to talk about how investors can get ready for higher rates. And, of course, will there be higher rates? Will the Federal Reserve raise interest rates? Janet Yellen said in 2015, some months ago, that this is the year that they will be raising rates. I mean, she wasn't that definitive, but pretty darn close. And they only have two more meetings. So how do you get ready for that as an investor? It's Wall Street's number one obsession, guessing how soon the Fed will start lifting rates or whether they'll do it and how the markets are going to handle it and what the reaction will be. And that's going to be one of our main talking points today. Also, we're going to talk about the Fed minutes that were released today. Did you see what the market did when the minutes came out? The market was strongly down, a couple hundred points on the Dow, came back to be positive, and then went right back down. But the Fed minutes were released, and I'm going to talk about what they said in those minutes. China's bear market, you know, they lost about a third of their value so far in the last couple of months, starting mostly in June. Does it mean we are next? Does that have... that we have a correlation when they go down, we go down, or we go down, they go down, or up? Or is there any correlation? We're going to discuss that. And 10 scary retirement statistics. I'm not going to go over all 10, but I'm going to go over a few that are pretty surprising. Ones that surprised me, I want to talk to you about and give those to you. And if I do have time, is this good advice? Pay small debts first. When you're in debt, pay the small ones, not too much, first, rather than the most expensive debt down first. Is that a good advice? There's been a study that kind of says it is. Well, why that? So those are the things I'm going to discuss. Unless you want to talk about something specific and you want to ask questions, you can always do that. We have, the market was down today, the Dow down 163 by the end of the day, the Nasdaq down 40, the S&P down 17, and it was kind of a wild ride today. Market was down early, kept going down, down, down. Then the minutes got released around 11 o'clock, about 5 minutes before 11. It was supposed to come out 11, but it got released early because someone jumped the gun. And the market turned around, started gaining, and actually got in the black for the day. Or the green and red, however you want to see it. But then turn around, start back down. And ended up being down. And what I find interesting is now the market peaked in this most recent cycle on the middle of July. All the indexes from July on are down. Okay. Now, don't misunderstand me. It wasn't up. The market was not up in middle of July. It wasn't necessarily up. It's up a percent or two. But since then, the market's been tracking downward. Not steeply downward necessarily. I'm not trying to, tell you that, oh, we're collapsing. No, that's not happening either. It's just slowly trickling down. And now the S&P is down for the year. The Dow is down for the year. The Nasdaq is still a little bit up for the year. So you can't, that's where the stronger indexes is in the Nasdaq stocks, which is kind of interesting because the Nasdaq usually leads up and down. So is it telling, even though it's been pretty not very well this year, is it telling us that that's where the strength is and that the market's not going to fall because of that? And I don't know they have the answer, by the way, and no one does. Anybody ever tells you they know what direction the market's going to take, they're lying. No one knows. You can't guess. There's no guessing. There's probabilities. There's red flags. There's green flags to look for toward. There's things that you, you know, historical things you can look at. But there is no predicting. There is nothing. You can't tell for sure. We talk about the six steps to investing success. Number one is organizing. Get organized. I try to help with that process when I meet with our listeners. Or when we talk about retirement accounts and when I review them. If you need help getting your financial life in order, let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART is how you can get through any time on our 24 hours a day listener line. We can talk live right now. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. I'm here for you on Invest Talk. 888-992-4278. We're going to talk to BJ in Fremont. How are you doing, BJ?
I'm good, Steve. Thank you for taking the call.
Thank you.
I wanted to know your views on Time Warner, TWX. What's your view on this stock?
I'm concerned about a number of the industry, this particular industry stock, media diversification, and mostly because of the cable, the tie to the cable, because the younger generation is breaking their tie with the cable. You know, that's one of the reasons why Netflix has done so well. Time Warner, though, a big media company like Time Warner and Disney and those kind of companies, they have lots of assets. So it's just not a cable asset that you have to worry about. But they are a big cable company. So they are going to survive. I don't have any problem with that. They're going to continue making money. They're not too expensive. Time Warner isn't, the symbol is TWX. Any of those things. But the perception is, subscribers are leaving the tie to the cable to their TV, and they're using other things, the internet and Netflix type of approach, and watching things they want to watch. So, it's a bit difficult. My feeling is to stay away from Time Warner at this point. It had a big down stroke here this month. And it was all about, that downstroke was all about cable subscribers, not much anything else. There was nothing else wrong. The earnings were up 8%. I mean, it's not like the earnings were bad. They weren't.
So do you think that their current business model is competing with internet users as a result? Subscribers are pulling, then why the earnings are still going up? If subscribers are going down, then why earnings are coming up?
Well, sales are still growing because they are, besides being tied to the cable, they also produce a lot of content, okay? Film, entertainment, and publishing content. So that not only are they, they make that, so that content is very valuable, and that is on the internet. So, it's not just the cable. But if you're asking me why they're having a little problems recently, and it is because of the tie, the less subscribers to the cable network. That's my opinion. I could be wrong. But if you go look at, Disney, the same problem. Exactly the same problem. It went down exactly the same time as Time Warner. Had nothing to do with their earnings, but it had something to do with subscribers leaving the cable. That's the problem.
But Disney, they announced that their outlook for the future earnings are not very good. And I think that was the reason, because it was climbing up quite fast. As a result, it was a highly valued stock. But once they gave the outlook, that is what impacted Disney's stock. But in case of Time Warner, was it the similar case? Or is it just a market perception that is...
Well, if that's just case, if that was just case for Time Warner, then why did Disney go down the exact same time? Take a look at the chart. You'll see. Got to go. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. This is the Best Talk. I'm Steve Peasley. We'll be right back.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Many may be holding too much in cash and bonds and not enough equities and alternative investments. Does your portfolio reflect your needs or your emotions? That's our talking point for Thursday's podcast. Bring your questions and join us then.
888-992-4278. Whatever's on your mind, we'll talk about it, as long as it's financial. Now, with the Federal Reserve poised to act, their meeting's coming up in September. There's two more meetings left, September and December. How can you prepare if they do raise higher rates? What can you do? And I'm not convinced, this is an article that I'm referring to that that's on our website, you can read it. I'm not convinced that you really should do anything, because I feel, and this article kind of supports my feeling, that the reaction has already happened to a possible rate hike. If you look at the 10-year Treasury, what's the interest rate? It's much higher than it was a few months ago. Why? Nothing's changed. But the perception is that the Fed may be raising rates this year. What can you do to protect yourself? Because even if they raise it just a little bit, the perception is if they raise it that the rates will go higher, that their bond funds will go down in value because of higher rates. And I believe that to be true. And you've already kind of seen that happen this year. Your bond funds, especially if you're in junk bond funds, have really taken a hit. Okay, so to date, the Vanguard Total Bond Market Index, for instance, the mutual fund index, total bond market, has fallen 1.6% year to date. So it's falling already, and the Federal Reserve hasn't changed rates. So what can you do? Well, you can shorten up your maturity of the bond funds you're holding. Have them short. You can go to cash. There's things you can do. What you need to do is look at the duration of the average maturity in your bond fund. What is the duration of that? Do you want to keep it short, maybe 2 years or less? Therefore, if rates do go up, it won't affect it so much. Mind you, it's still not good. It's still not, and you're not going to make much return or yield because they're not paying much. But you're avoiding, the longer the duration, the more pain there will be in a rate-raising environment if the Fed starts raising rates. Frankly, I think they will. I think they will raise rates. I think they're going to be one and done for a while. And it really will, whether they raise them or not in September will depend on that jobs report, the last one we're going to see, the August jobs report. The last one they or I or us will see before their meeting. I think their meeting is like September 14th or something like that. That's the next meeting. So those are a couple things you can do. You can also just go to cash. Avoid the whole thing. You can sit on cash for a while. That's not going to kill you. You won't make any money on it, but you won't lose anything either. So those are things you can do. And you should probably consider them, especially if you're heavy in bond funds and the duration is long. You don't want to be there, not in this environment. Now, since the market could have already reacted, this is kind of an interesting thing. The market has already reacted to a rate increase. So if they actually did increase the rate, the bond market may not move. Doesn't have to, because it may be already, the old buy the rumor, sell the news. And in this case, the rumor is that they're going to raise rates. Well, the investors already reacted to that. And when they actually do raise the rates, it's a non-event. That's a possibility. We're going to see, aren't we? Let's go to a boy, Shraba in Dublin. Did I say that right?
Yes. Shraba?
How you doing? Thanks for the call.
Yeah, good. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. I'd like to hear your opinion about the Habit Restaurant, HABT symbol.
So give me that symbol again.
Habit Restaurant, that symbol is HABT.
Habit. Okay. And that's the hamburger place, right?
Habit Restaurant.
Yeah. They operate 110 fast food casual restaurants in 4 states, offering made-to-order char-grilled burgers and sandwiches. They're growing pretty darn fast, 30 to 40% sales growth. They're a very small company, $709 million market cap, so it's a micro-cap company. They're going to make 26. They make money and have made money every year since 2009. They've also, and only in 2013 did their earnings go down a little bit. Every 14, 15, and next year, their earnings are going to go up 20, 30%. They came out an IPO in December of 2014 at $18 a share. $18 a share was the IPO. The first trade was in the 30s. So might have been an IPO at 18, but it looks like it was mispriced to me. They should have priced it higher, but that's what it came out at, $18. But the first time you could buy it was in the mid-30s. Today is at $27.28, still above the IPO price. So it looks pretty good, but it is expensive. You know, 32 cents, they're going to make 32 cents next year per share. Therefore, you know, at a $27 price, that is, you know, 20 is 36, 294. That's about 160, 180 PE. That's pretty high. Pretty high. It's a great growth story, but I don't think I'd be interested because it's just too expensive for me. The Habit, H-A-B-T, everybody. Coming up on InvestTalk 101, the search for dividends. And we're always open to your questions, always. 888-99-CHART.
What makes a stock fit into a certain category like emerging markets? Or what's your question? Why not ask it now at 888-99-CHART on InvestTalk.
888-992-4278. What do you want to talk about? Let's talk about the Federal Reserve minutes that were released accidentally 5 minutes early today. Now, this is the minutes from the July meeting. So it goes back to July. So try to put yourself back then, and not here in August, but back in July, a month ago. Most of the federal officials said that conditions are very near that would allow them to raise interest rates. They did say not quite yet, but approaching broad support for sooner than later. What does that mean? See, this is how they talk, you know. They're not telling you sooner than later. Well, that, in their mind, sooner could be December or next year. But that's not what Yellen said a few months ago. She said this year. So, now remember, they have a meeting in September and they have another meeting in December. They said they would like to see further improvement in the job market. Remember, the job market was stronger for July. So, as I've been saying, I think, you know, if we get a strong job market in August, which is the last one we'll see in the first part of September, that's going to give them ammunition to raise their rates. They also indicated that it might be just a one-step test. I've kind of suggested that too, or say they might be one and done for a while, a long while. But I think what, you know, this has been the topic of everybody all over the financial news. What is the Fed going to do? And since it has been the topic forever and everybody's speculating, so they're either probably going to raise the rates in July or September. The Fed also wanted to see a little bit more inflation, and we're not seeing that. We had Consumer Price Index came out, which is an inflation gauge, and it was up 0.1% today. So there was no inflation, and the PPI last week also was low. Excuse me. So we're not seeing inflation. There really is no good reason for them to raise the rates, really. But they feel they are compelled that they want to have some. They need ammunition. Ammunition to fight the next recession. Therefore, the rates have to be higher. But raising rates might cause the next recession. Raising a rate is definitely going to cause the dollar to be stronger, you would think. If the dollar is stronger, that's going to hurt our exports, and imports are going to grow. That slows down GDP, does it not? Yes, it does. So those are things that could happen out there. Now let's get back to work answering your questions today. Get your questions to me anytime you want, but you can call right now live. But if you can't, you can always leave a message on our 24-hour listen line, and we'll answer that question next. 888-99-CHART.
Hello, this is Karen again. You gave me such a nice answer to the last question. I thought I would ask another one. If I were to want to assemble a very small portfolio of stocks, I understand that there are like a number of sectors that you should invest in, something like six areas. Maybe one would be commodities, another one would be healthcare, but I don't really know what they are. I wonder if you could talk about this a little bit. Thanks so much for a great show. Bye.
Yeah, there's 10 major sectors out there. And you can Google it, go to Investopedia and say, what are the sectors of the market? And they'll give you the list. It's pretty simple. And then there's all these subsectors, but there's 10 major areas. You always want to be, you kind of want to spread it out, your holdings in the various sectors, because you want to good diversification. And you also want to not have too much in any one sector. Now, I have a rule. You know, we like to buy 3% to 5%. Usually, it's a 3% allocation in any one stock, and usually not more than 15 to 20% in any one sector. And that's a good rule of thumb to follow. And, you know, knowing which sectors to buy when, that's always difficult. You can always buy the least expensive sectors, the sector that's been beat up the most, which, of course, in this case would be commodities. But you might have to be patient before they'll turn around. But they will. They're going to happen. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of when, not if. It's when. And what if it's 3 years from now? Can you wait that long? Can you be patient? See, that's some of the issues that you have to deal with. But good question. Thank you very much. I have two new dates for free retirement reviews, August 26th in Dana Point, which is right around the corner, and, of course, September 9th in San Jose. So if you want to meet with me up in the Bay Area in San Jose, I'll be there September 9th. You can reserve your time by going to investtalk.com and click on the schedule a meeting button there. You'll see it. Or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. I'd love to meet with you. Give me a call.
It helps to have perspective as you negotiate the ups and downs of the stock market. Seeing the cycles, how to recognize and harness the power of market cycles. That's just one of the recorded webinars that you can access anytime when you're an InvestTalk insider. Join up for free right now on InvestTalk.com.
Let's go ahead and talk to Alex in Boca Raton, Florida. Boca Raton, if anybody doesn't know what that means, I think that means small rat or something like that. Is that what it means, Alex?
Yes. Hi, Steve.
How you doing? Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you. I have a question about my 401k.
Sure.
I have so far saved about $600,000 on it.
Good for you.
And I'm kind of worried about this year as how's the market going to react during September and October. Do you suggest to move some money into the money market or keep it?
That's not a bad thing. That's not, I don't have any argument with that because, you need to have some protections against the down market. And I think that, we are way overdue for a correction, Alex, way overdue. But no one really knows when that will happen. I mean, I can't tell you when. But moving to a little bit of some of your money, a portion of your 401k to a defensive position is not a bad thought.
Okay, and just one more question. Does the market support, S&P support, give us any idea if it breaks a certain point, then we could see possibly a correction or?
Well, the long term moving average, which is the 200-day moving average, and that has been historically, if it breaks the 200-day moving average, it's in a downtrend, and you need to avoid that. Well, what's really interesting is it's right above the 200-day moving average and actually traded below the 200-day moving average and then popped up above it today. And that's for the S&P 500. If you talk about the Dow 30, the 30 largest stocks, they've been below the 200-day moving average for a month and a half. If you talk about the NASDAQ stocks, they are still clearly above, have never popped below the 200-day moving average. So that has been, Alex, the traditional breaking point. And the broadest index of those three is the S&P 500. So it's really close to that breaking point, or, you know, what people normally say, well, it's below the 200-day moving average, therefore it's in a downtrend. But it's not there yet, but it's close. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks for the call, Alex.
Thank you so much for
Thanks
the
for
information.
The call. And I appreciate all those podcast listeners out there. I really do. And, you know, Client Path with Peasley, my firm, does handle clients out of state. So don't think just because you're in another state that you can't use my services. You can. So let's go to Harry in Modesto. How you doing, Harry? Harry, you there?
Yeah.
How you doing? You might want to turn off your radio. Harry? Yellow. Did I lose him? Harry, you're on live right now. I don't know. I think we lost Harry. He wanted to talk about Pilgrim's Pride Corporation, PPC. P is in Paul, P is Paul, and C is in cat. Harry, call back so you can ask your question about it. I'd be happy to talk to you about it. It's a $5.7 billion company, Pilgrim's Pride Corporation. Okay, Chinese bear markets. Chinese have had a bear market. They've lost a third, 33% of their value. Okay, and that was mostly in June. So they are in a bear market. So my question to you, does that mean that we are going to be in the bear market? Is there a correlation between the Chinese stock market and the American stock market, or vice versa? When we go up, do they go up? And we go down, they go down? Is there a correlation? And the answer is no. There's no correlation. You can go back. I mean, the correlation is so minuscule that it's non-existent. And as an example, I don't know if you remember this, but in August of 1997 through the August of 1998, the Chinese market fell 80%. Remember, they just fell 30% a month of June. Then they fell 80%. What do you think the U.S. market did for that same period? It was up 3%. So there really is no correlation. So if you're thinking, you know, the Chinese market did really bad and we had to be careful with our market, you can stop thinking that. It's not happening. We're not related. Okay? Because I was just, you know, I was curious myself, by the way. And the last 10 years, do you think, and this is really for the last 10 years, do you think our stock market has done better than the Chinese stock market, or the Chinese stock market done better than ours? Remember, they got crushed in the recession just like we did. Which one was better performing in the last 10 years? The Chinese market has far outperformed our market. You probably would think that's not true, huh? Nope, it's true. Kind of interesting. Time for InvestTalk 101, In Search of Dividends. Steady cash flow is important. We all know that. But often, investors are unable to distinguish a quality and dependable dividend and a company that can do that versus a high-risk company that the dividend is not so safe. And there are some things you can look for. And one of the major ones that we talked about often over and over and over is a payout ratio. Payout ratio is just, it's a simple number. How much of their earnings, if they're going to make $3 this year, how much do they pay of that $3 in a dividend? That's the payout ratio. Do they pay half, 50%, $1.50 of that $3? We like to see a payout ratio of 60% or less. And you say, well, why not more? Well, because we think companies should always retain some money to grow their company, shouldn't they? So that's why. Also, you might want to look for companies that have economic advantages of some kind. It could be they have a special proprietary technology. Let's say it's a drug company that has patents, that lots of patents on very good stocks that last forever, okay? A very good drugs that last forever, okay? Or maybe it's a brand name like Coca-Cola. You know that it's going to be very difficult to compete with them, and they're always going to make sales, and they're always going to pay a dividend, you know, that kind of thing. The Morningstar, I think, calls this a moat. A moat. Someone, a competitor trying to get over the moat to compete with them. So you got to have some kind of economic advantage. And you always look for earnings stability and staying power, earnings and sales, long term. Okay, these things kind of give you the health checkup of the company. Okay, remember, you're investing in a business, and you kind of have to know what, be attuned to what drives profits for that business. You know, especially if you're talking about the dividends and what are the dangers of the dividends being cut. There's a book out there called Dividend Achievers. You should get it. If you want to be a dividend payer, or you want to be a dividend investor, get that book. There's stocks in there that have been paying and growing dividends 20, 30 years in a row. That's something you want to know. That's InvestTalk 101. If you have a question about dividends, we're here for you right now, 888-99-CHART. Or you can write me a note, click on Contact Steve, or maybe Contact Justin, at InvestTalk.com.
Did you get your dose of Steve today? Steve Peasley's market commentary can't always put things right in the market, but it can put things into perspective. There for you every morning on InvestTalk.com.
Hey, this is Oscar calling from San Francisco. Just wondering, what do you think about KMI, Kinder Morgan, and would you be buying at these prices? Thank you very much.
Kinder Morgan, Inc., everybody, provides natural gas transportation storage services in North America. Remember how popular these things used to be? Because we at KPP, we owned these many of these a number of years ago, and we started selling them, and I haven't had any for, you know, probably a couple of years now, because they got too expensive. We loved them because of the dividends, but when the dividends got down to 5 and 6%, they started to go down. You know, and they kept down. Well, they were paying 8-9%. All of a sudden, they didn't look so good to us anymore. And now, Kinder Morgan, I will say this, they were $44 in April, and now they're at $33.58. So they've come down. They made $1 per share in 2014. They're going to make 95 cents next year per share. So that's why they, you know, all commodities. Now, is it a good time to buy? Is this where you want to buy it? Is it? I'll tell you this: insiders are starting to buy the stock. Earnings are still going down, though. Don't think they are popped up yet. You know, quarterly, they're still going down. I think I'd wait. I think I'd be a little patient. Looks like they hit a bottom to me, but I still think you need to be a little more patient. So we still have time for your question before we're done for the day, everybody. 888-99-CHART is how you reach me right now. I'm registered investment advisor, financial advisor Steve Peasley, and you can reach me at 888-99-CHART.
People appreciate good suggestions from friends. So, if you enjoy listening to Steve and Justin on this podcast, don't hesitate to share your experience with a friend. How often can you recommend something worthwhile that doesn't cost anything? And thanks again for subscribing to InvestTalk.
888-992-4278. Let's talk about 10 scary retirement statistics. I'm not going to go over all 10. I'm not. But I am going to go over really interesting ones. The National Association of Government Defined Contribution Administrators, Inc., whoever they are, provided a whole bunch of statistics, okay? And that's what we're going to go by. The first one they have is 22% of workers are very confident they will have enough money in retirement. 22%. I don't think that's very good, by the way. What's more scary is 45% have saved exactly nothing for retirement. Nothing. The median retirement account balance of those who have saved is $3,000 for working age households and only $12,000 for households approaching retirement. That is pretty darn scary. And that's, we're talking about nothing. These people are not going to have enough money. It's just not going to be enough money. Then when they get to the other scary part that I see, they did have statistics that if you're a person that reaches 65, and I've talked to you about this one, the chances are extremely high that you'll be around to 85 years old. So you got all those years that you got to have money. Then I'm going to skip some statistics. $220,000. That's how much the average 65-year-old couple can expect to part with over the next 20 years in out-of-pocket cost for health care. Don't think Medicare is going to cover everything. You need $220,000 on average as a couple, because that's what's going to come out of your pocket from 65 to 85 years old. Okay, so don't strictly rely on Medicare. It's not going to happen. You're not going to have it. 62%. That's all the average retiree can expect Medicare bills to pay. 62% of the medical cost. That's it. You're going to have to cough up with the rest. And that number is rising, not falling. With the new Affordable Health Care Act, it's going to go up more that you're going to have to pay out of pocket in Medicare. Not less. This is what I love about this. Everybody thinks it's less because the politicians tell you less. Don't ever believe any politician. I don't care if it's Republican or Democrat. The statistics are the statistics. They can twist them. You know, everybody can twist any statistic to say anything they want. So just be very, very careful. Let's wrap up this hour with a question from our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Bruce from New York. I found your show about 6 months ago and listened to it daily on podcast. It's an excellent learning tool. My question is there a free website like Yahoo Finance that calculates support and resistance for specific stocks, or do I have to calculate it by myself? Thanks very much, and keep up the great work.
Okay, no one really calculates support and resistance. It shows up in a chart. And you can use stockcharts.com, and they produce some really nice charts. And you do a one-year chart, a daily price action of a one-year chart to start with. And you can see where the price of the stock has traded before at certain levels, high and low, and they become the support and resistance. You will see on a chart the tendency for the stock to hold support and the tendency to for the stock to stop at resistance going up. And that's all it is. Reading a chart is not a science. It's an art. The reason why it tends to be true is because a lot of people read charts and they react to them. They buy and sell based on what they see in the chart. Therefore, it makes it self-evident. It produces the chart that I'm talking about, support and resistance points. Okay, but there's no really calculations. Okay, let's wrap it up, everybody. We're out of time. A quick reminder to test your tolerance for risk. It's essential that you understand the important factors in investing success. Just go to investtalk.com. Try it for free, our risk analysis. It's a series of questions. It takes a couple minutes. I'm Registered Investor Advisor and Financial Advisor Steve Peasley. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP Financial, thanks for listening. I hope you have a good evening, and let's meet again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.